understand, it may well be a cliche, but if you decided to actually take a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old across the Pyrenees for 33 exceptional days and across Spain for 800 kilometres to Santiago, you might possibly say the heat could well be on. If you then go on to qualify that by actually being a fabulous, entertaining and articulate individual and general all-round wonderful person, your name might well be Melanie Gao. Isn't that right, Melanie? How are you?
Gorgeous introduction. Can I give you a big virtual hug?
Oh, yeah, there we are. It's the whole, oh, my, fantastic stuff. Yes. Wonderful to connect with you once again, and actually to feature you live on Southside Broadcasting for the first time, because we met, of course, at the Rebecca Hossack Art Gallery when we were supporting our mutual friend and colleague and wonderful soul that is the legendary Tallulah Rendell.
That's actually right, isn't it? She was doing her launch for her third crowdfunded album, and what a special evening it was. She is my magic girlfriend.
Well, there you go. Now, this particular thing, which ties in with Walking with Angels, the story of 33 exceptional days, very much at the heart of what we're talking about with your good self today, share with us. Was it just a case you thought, hang on, chaps, let's do something like walk across the Pyrenees? What kind of led you to take this particular line?
It's going to sound a little uncool, but it was a very ordinary Tuesday night, and we were watching a DVD. Now, often we watch movies that have got half-naked sweaty men with big weapons in saving the world, because I have two boys.
Uh-huh.
But every once in a while, they'll put on a mummy film just for me. And this film was called The Way, which is basically about some middle-aged people walking and talking. So the boys were very patiently sat down with our sausage and mash and our peas, a little bit of gravy, to watch a boring film. And at the end, as the credits rolled, both of them stood up and said, "We want to do that." And this is interesting because about 30 years ago, I'd bought a book by Paulo Coelho called The Pilgrimage or The Pilgrim. Mm. And it had sparked that desire in me. And that's kind of where I realized, actually, it can simply be a film or a book or something that sparks the inspiration. But with three people in the room who wanted to do something, it seemed really easy to say yes. I mean, after all, how hard could it be?
Well, Paulo Coelho, of course, one of my favourites, The Alchemist, which again changes one thing to the other. Constant processes of change that we've got here. Let's say we work on the premise of saying, okay, let's consider the end product. Where do we want to be at the end of the journey? Was it a case of letting the nitty-gritty and the minutiae of the organisation begin to take care of themselves, or were there challenges en route?
I didn't have a lot of time to think about it before it happened. We decided we would do it after my eldest son's GCSEs. And then 18 months later, they'd come around very, very quickly, and we hadn't got a lot of planning. I'd literally just been asked, you know, did I do any training for this? And it is a question that crops up, and I've had enough time to think about it. What people mostly assume is that, have you done some physical training, which we didn't. But it takes far more than physical prowess to complete it. In fact, we saw a lot of people who'd got many gym hours in their muscles have to leave because they couldn't actually manage it, or they'd got injured. It takes so much more than just your physical ability to do this, because you don't have to do it any time. So you have to choose to get up every day and do it. Now, I walked for 33 days with blisters, and I had to sew them at 4 o'clock in the morning, because you leave a thread in so the fluid can drain during the day. And then, you know, you set off before dawn to walk 25 to 30 kilometers every day before midday heat. So you're almost doing a marathon a day. I appreciate it's in kilometers, but it feels like a marathon a day over terrain you don't know. Remote places don't have facilities. The water can make you sick. The food is inadequate. Sleep deprivation comes with the territory, because your traveling companions come in all sizes and temperaments, and there's always somebody who snores. And so this is the challenge. The challenge is actually that you have to get up every day. And the funny thing that another question I've just been asked was, I've heard that it's not very nice, it's quite crowded, and a lot of the walk is along the road. But I want, you know, what do you think? What's your opinion? And what I've realized is that actually you take yourself on this walk. And it's about you and how you handle any challenges. And life has tough roads that you walk along, and it's very crowded and it's not comfortable. But a pilgrimage isn't about rest and recreation. It's about throwing a challenge down to your life. And although I understood that at the beginning, and we left almost knowing that we had the resources to get through whatever challenge there was, but that we were going to take things as they came. We were going to all go through very different phases at different times. What we took with us, really, was this knowledge that it was a space that would show us what kind of people we were. Or I wanted it to be the space that my sons could choose what men they would become.
I'm reminded of the classic The Road Less Travelled, which was very popular, I think, in the 80s in terms of the views and also the essence that in previous decades, of course, previous years, such things were often perceived as being a pilgrimage. And when I first heard the title, Walking with Angels, I thought, oh, this is interesting. And looking at some of the fabulous photographs that you've actually taken, photographs more than that, works of art that we've actually got on myofficetoday.co.uk, we started with It's Just the Beginning, we have The Confession, we have Dust Breathes, You Are Here Now, and so on. Lots of really inspirational prints. Was that also part of the notion as an artist, as you're developing this whole thing, to actually capture the series of moments that went on to make this 33-day, month-long, or slightly over a month in many ways, journey that you went on?
So thank you for asking that, Alex. I mean, I will be very honest. I went on this as a mother. I just happened to be an artist and a writer. And so I ended up not being able to avoid responding to it like that. As an artist, I'm always looking for the moment, or I'm asking why am I, I'm particularly drawn to any particular moment. And then as a writer, I'm trying to tell its story. And the thing about a long walk is that you end up on a pilgrimage, whether you're meant to go on one or not. Any time that you give yourself in which transformation can take place, it's inevitable you'll find insights. And they might be new ones, but they might be ones that you've forgotten. And some of them almost felt like a cliche in that there was one day when we left a huge city and it took us nearly 3 hours to walk past the infrastructure that creates this horrible pall over you. You know, you're walking along train tracks and under electricity pylons and it smells, and then suddenly there was a little bridge and some sunflowers on the side, and 20 minutes later the path had turned to sort of soft white. And right there and then, there's a picture I've got that's called You Are Here Now. And you, at that point, you cannot tell that what it's taken us to get there. And from there you can't see what's around the corner. And of course, that just speaks of being in the moment and of taking it for what it is. And I don't know what it is about this particular journey, but it lent itself to teaching lots of lessons, and I couldn't help but notice them. And I never intended to tell their story. I never intended to tell the story at all. It just came out. And it was a very big privilege that people responded to it. So then I've ended up creating an exhibition around them, and then I've ended up giving a talk about it. And now, you know, I'm now writing a photographic book about it. But it's a lot to do, not with the visceral physical journey, but with the metaphor that a pilgrimage is about life.
Blog entries that we actually look at, I must admit, some of the titles are wonderful. I particularly enjoy My Prawns Are Broken, which surely has got to be made into a movie. I mean, you know, from that point of view, you know, just title it My Prawns Are Broken. It's got to be a winner every time of day. So a classic like that. I'm always tempted to say, with a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old, did you ever at any stage in the 33 days hear those immortal words, "Are we there yet?"
They were far too busy going through some odd experiences. My 16-year-old spent the first 2 days throwing up. On our second day, he threw up for 5 hours. He couldn't even keep water down.
Uh-huh.
And we were literally in the middle of nowhere. It was as far to go back into France as it was to go on into Spain. And I, you know, my 12-year-old got really frustrated with that whole stop-start. And he actually just walked off. And I you know, I couldn't hold him back, and then, but I couldn't leave my 16-year-old, who sort of sat down and just cried, saying, you know, I can't go on. But right opposite him was a cross and a gravestone. And so he realized he had no choice.
That's a kind of motivation, isn't it, really, I suppose?
Yes, yes. So, you know, are we there yet? It was kind of, you know, not one of our major things.
No,
and literally every day you actually don't know how far, you know how far it is, but you have no idea how distance is going to take you, how long, because no 4 kilometres is the same. So you get very used to, you know, not being in the future, not being worried about what's happening. And when you get there, you still have to find somewhere to live anyway. So
Melanie, how did you cope without iPods, without laptops, without GPS devices and sat knives, etc.? Or did you have that as well?
I have to be honest, I had an iPad, but I was using it as a hard drive for the photograph.
Right.
I had a phone because, as far as I'm concerned, everyone needs an emergency safety net at some point. Had we had to call for help, that was, it's, you know, it's a sensible thing for a mother to do with two kids.
Yeah. Well,
but I wasn't keen on paying the roaming charges.
Indeed.
I couldn't figure out how to get a new SIM card.
Yeah.
So very, very little time was spent online. We do live in a modern world.
Yeah.
You know, my mother was worried. So, of course, I made Facebook posts. And actually, they started to, you know, help me to articulate the experience a little bit as I was going along. Mm. My eldest had a phone, which every time we got on Wi-Fi, he's a teenager, and he struggled with letting go of his teen world here.
Mm.
And then at some point, he lost it. And after that, we never thought about it again.
Well, it's just a case of we are travelling through, pilgrims on the journey of life and fellow co-travellers in the cosmos, as I'm occasionally wont to say. If I had a time machine at present, I would immediately go to Edinburgh between the 26th of May and 9th of June on 2014 to see the fabulous exhibition, the Walking with Angels solo exhibition, which of course has also been present at Maidenhead as well. Are there any plans for any other showings of your fabulous work with the Walking with Angels exhibition?
Yes, I'm in talks of taking it to Cardiff, and I've now developed a fully mobile one for Edinburgh, specifically because it wasn't a conventional art gallery space. I ended up creating a mobile exhibition that I can take and put in a 2.5 meter space or a 5 meter space. It fits in the back of the car. So in fact, Alex, I'm actually looking for opportunities now.
Well, I can think of
people who would want to see it.
I can think of two spaces immediately: the Middlesbrough Institute of Modern Arts, MIMA, as far as Teesside is concerned, and certainly I think we should be able to fit something in as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned, and indeed the installation art that we actually have there. So we'll have to get on the case with that, and the campaign starts now, clearly, to start addressing that. And speaking of campaigns, obviously we've mentioned some of the fabulous things that you're doing with respect to this, and we've obviously plugged the website myofficetoday.co.uk. People can still actually get involved with respect to this through the magic that is crowdfunding, can they not, Melanie?
They can, and this has been such an interesting journey. Obviously, I've been involved with Tallulah's crowdfunding, the singer that we mentioned at the beginning. But when I first gave a small talk about this, literally almost to friends, it was 3 weeks after I came back, and it was in the town hall in my local area. At the end of it, everyone said to me, you are going to write a book, aren't you? And then literally at every occasion that I've talked about it or put the exhibition up, people have said to me, you know, we'd like a book. And eventually I understood that's how we got inspired by a book or a film.
Mm.
And this is how the inspiration gets out. So, I sort of felt it wasn't about me anymore. I was just given the job of figuring out how to do it. I'm on limited income, as we all are. I don't have the budget for publishing a book, although as a conventionally published author, I do know the process.
And clearly, Melanie, we simply need a couple of Premiership footballers to actually sort of add to the quality of the whole thing. That's all. It's as simple.
Right. Well, I'm a World Cup free zone. Nobody is going to get bitten in the process of making this book.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to rest from all of that.
Yeah.
But actually, I have something like £300 left to raise to reach my target.
Okay.
With But I have now decided, you know, it's the more the merrier. Yep. It's the more that people can get involved, the more that they will become a part of this. And that's what I've understood about crowdfunding. Mm. It really is a partnership, and that closeness, the connection is such a privilege.
Absolutely.
I know every single one of the people now who have helped me to make this happen, and without them it wouldn't. And any extra money I get on top of my target is just going to go towards funding the exhibitions and the talk free into schools and community groups. So it's all going towards more stuff to give back into the communities and to people.
Which, and again, all details presumably you can find, and indeed you can find on myofficetoday.co.uk, where you can find details with respect to that and the talk and so on. The next critical question, of course, Melanie, is what happens next? It's an interesting line, but inevitably, I think you're going to be asked this question. Is it going to be the Sahara? Is it going to be the Gobi? Are there other parts of the world you wish to actually sort of take the suns off to? Are there any other thoughts in terms of where you might be pursuing this? Or is it the case of, no, I'm just actually sort of, getting things together at present, effectively.
Well, very interestingly, of course, I did think this might well be the last last quality time I spent with my sons, because they're 16. They're now 17.
It's one heck 30. Of a family holiday, I can say.
Yes, and they have planned to go off. They've already coordinated. When one is 21, the other one's going to be 18, and they're going to walk the Japanese temples. Mother not included, as we know.
Okay, right.
What we're doing at the moment, of course, is almost running to keep up with how this has grown. Mm. But I would be very interested in a different pilgrimage, potentially a Buddhist pilgrimage, or one of the other pilgrimages around the world. There are many, many places in the world I'd like to travel, and I have done. This is a very interesting concept. It's a very interesting experience, this one of giving yourself enough time to notice.
Melanie, stay with us for a few minutes, if you will. We're going to have a short musical break, and I think you might just recognise the artist for this one. But wouldn't it be wonderful if Tallulah Randall could provide the musical soundtrack to the movie version of Walking with Angels, Melanie? Just a general thought there.
Just think of that little dream. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
There we are, you see. Just roll that out in every sense.
You're going to want to producer's credit now.
Oh, I'm sure we can negotiate in all sorts of ways. It's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry. There's so much we'd love to sort of focus on with respect because I'm particularly interested in toasters don't roast chickens, which is something we'll talk about at a future time. But I'll leave that as a hanging narrative trope in the ether. But a reminder, if people are interested in following through with, of course, the magical world of Walking with Angels, you've got obviously Facebook, Twitter, those things are there. But when you say myofficetoday.co.uk is the best go-to website if you're looking to look at the prints, possibly purchase some of the prints that are actually there, some of the fabulous sort of areas there. Is that the best go-to slot, Melanie?
I would absolutely say so, yes indeed. But again, I am on Twitter, Mel Gow, and you can find me on Facebook. So I love hearing from people. I would absolutely love anybody who wanted to hear a talk in a school or a community group, an exhibition space. Prepared to walk the nation.
Oh, please. No, we'll certainly have to get you up to Lincoln and indeed Teesside before too long. Obviously, the glamour slots after the Pyrenees. Why not make Teesside? It's a whole wonderful time. Still to come on the programme today, we're going to be focusing on Gertrude Bell, of course, who was one of the early cartographers of Iran and Iraq, and indeed originally from the Northeast, although born in Washington. So lots of tales about Gertrude and her challenging and following her dream in many ways. Gertrude of Arabia, in many ways, was the sort of line from that. We have Richard Pink, who's the producer and director of a recent play, which you can actually access on YouTube as well. And we'll be running it over lunchtime here on Southside Broadcasting. We'll probably actually put it up as a podcast as well. We've got Katrina Lakin talking about her wonderful work with the Lady Collection of Barbershop Quartets, or Barbershop Quartets with Ladies. And we've got Richard Fitzwilliams reflecting and ruminating on the recent Queen's Birthday Honours List. All this and more on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Southside Broadcasting for Hospedia Channel 1 at James Cook University Hospital, and of course occasionally on our sister service sirenonline.co.uk. But we do have two critical questions for you, your good self now, Melanie, and these are, you know, always, you know, that we call them our kind of audience research questions, but are you ready for these?
Oh, it seems like I'm under pressure now.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully now. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on Southside Broadcasting today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh, my goodness me, it's been exceptional. I was hoping you and I were going to be able to talk after I'd gone silent online. Because I really wanted to say thank you so much. This was astounding. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and your questions were very, very interesting. Thank you.
Well, the next critical question is, as I feel we've only really just started with the overture, can we actually look forward to featuring you again on one of our stations, either Lincoln or Teesside or indeed the Globe, in the very near future? Will you return?
Alex, please, just say jump and I'll ask how high.
Hurrah!
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
My wife Betty was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Through the surgery and telling our daughters, I could still remain positive, but eventually I felt there was nothing more I could do for her. That's when I felt I was falling. That's when Tony was brilliant.
I would offer support to the family wherever I could, ultimately helping Betty fulfill her wish of passing away at home.
No one should face cancer alone. With your support, more nurses like Tony can be there for people like Betty and Bill. Text Tony to 70550 to donate £5 today. We are Macmillan Cancer Support.
We receive 94p of every pound donated.
With a high-spec accommodation, all with ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential nursing and dementia service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or email us at roseville@prestigegroup.uk.com.
Roseville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Thank you.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
So after the inspirational words of Melanie Gow there, trekking over the Pyrenees with her two sons, and why not indeed, walking with angels, we move on to, again, the virtual world of hyperspace and so on, and I typed in the letters CATRINALAKIN, Katrina Lakin, of course, to the search engine, and heaps of wonderful images came about with respect to Katrina on duty at health fairs, at Who Do You Think You Are live events, at tanks in Scarborough, Verita, and yet she's back with us. Katrina Lakin, are you indeed there?
Hello, I am.
It's been too long since you were last with us, Katrina. Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous. But here we are back together. And how have you been? How have the barbershop quartets been going? How's life been in the Lakin household?
Life has been very good, thank you. Mm-hmm. I recently got engaged, so that was very exciting. Well. I've not only got a chorus, but I have in fact now got a quartet as well, or another quartet.
Good heavens.
So that's very exciting.
It is.
We've only been together a few months, so still fairly new. But
you will need to speak to one of our other relative newbies who's just graduated in English from the University of Lincoln. That would be Holly Parker, who I believe sings in a York barbershop quartet of ladies. So, and because I did mention yourself, it could be an interesting line, because I said obviously a Selby, and but anyway, that's by the by. So, and international competitions, have they still been sort of part and parcel of the whole thing?
Not international, but national, yes.
Or, as we like to refer to them, and I know it's the official term, sing-outs. She's wonderful.
Yep.
So, Katrina, why should somebody, if they're obviously of the female persuasion, if they're looking to actually go into the ladies' barbershop quartets, why should they consider actually looking up for their nearest quartet of a barbershop quartet? What is it about the whole singing thing that you'd say, this is why it is a wonderful, inspirational activity to engage in?
I think the main thing is it's a lot of fun. It sounds good, and you get to meet a lot of other ladies in with the same hobbies and interests as you. I believe there has been a lot of research done, and singing is actually really good for your health. So it is good fun. Mm-hmm. We also have lots of cake as well, so maybe that cancels it out a bit.
Cake,
I don't know.
Cake and singing. It's phenomenal.
Oh, yes. Well, not at the same time, obviously.
And that, Katrina, is what obviously marks you out as one of our regular correspondents who kind of got your finger on the pulse, you know. You can have your cake, you can have your sing, but don't do them both together, it'll cause a problem, you know.
You crumbs actually, everywhere, yeah.
Exactly, crumbs and possible choking. Either of those two things, yeah. Not a good look in any way,
shape, or form. No, definitely not.
So, and clearly, if people are saying, hang on, this is all very biased towards the ladies' barbershop, obviously there are blokes' barbershop quartets as well. You can use.
There are indeed. Yeah.
Do you ever get together? I mean, do you ever sort of have a kind of collaborative, almost a choir of collective nouns in terms of male barbershop quartets and female barbershop quartets?
Yeah, they do happen now and again. And obviously the national competitions are open to, the choruses are just for the ladies or the men, but a lot of the men come to the ladies' conventions to watch and vice versa. So it's a very friendly atmosphere, and there are lots of sort of joint sister brother choruses that get together and do sort of octets now and again as well. So.
And given that, I think in terms of history, the barbershop quartet as a phenomenon really is American in origin. I'm fairly sure in terms of it's crossed over the Atlantic. Do you still find that, I mean, do you ever get American versions coming over to Britain and performing, and is it a whole, or vice versa, in fact?
Yeah, we do. I mean, the latest BABS, which is the men's convention, the national competition, they had their 40th anniversary this year, just in May gone. And they had 6 American gold medal quartets over to perform on the show. So it was an amazing opportunity to go and watch them all.
So just checking on our acronyms here, we've got BABS, which of course stands for the
British Association of Barbershop Singers.
And LABS, which is
the Ladies Association of British Barbershop Singers.
It's simple, isn't it? You know, it's just important because, you know, we can always hear people listening on a podcast saying, Babs, Labs, what are they all about? Yeah, exactly. What's going on there? In a few weeks' time, we'll hopefully be welcoming you back on another location report, Katrina, because we're looking to revisit the wonderful Tom Piercy Delight, which is, of course, the York Maze.
I'm very looking forward to it.
I don't even know what the theme is this year. He's kept it very quiet. So, last year it was 50 years of Doctor Who, of course, so I have suggested 50 years of Thunderbirds next year, and on the grounds that we could have international rescue to actually sort of get us out of the maze in every sense of the word. But as we mentioned, we were speaking to Melanie Gow just a few moments ago before you joined us on the production. Melanie, who did a 33-day pilgrimage across the Pyrenees with her two sons, then aged 12 and 16. Lots of inspiration for her. What's the most inspirational thing you've ever encountered, Katrina, or kind of the thing, or the individual, or the movie, or the book that has sort of led you to think, yeah, actually, that's for me. That'll work.
Oh, I don't know, to be honest.
You could, of course, say Mike Dooley's Thoughts for the Day, but that's by the by. You know, it's just as a minor point.
yeah, no, they are very good. Well. I'm not sure, to be honest. Wow. I have, I mean, all these people that do the marathons and Three Peaks challenges and
It's extraordinary, isn't it? It is extraordinary. We celebrate the insanity. Oh no, it's great stuff, and it is something that's actually there. But and you know, I say I was fortunate enough to meet Melanie at a launch in London of the album The Banshee and the Moon, an exhibition at the Rebecca Hossack Art Gallery, and so it was intriguing then in terms of way forward. I think ultimately it's a case of when it's right for the individual, they will develop and grow on that particular perspective. Yeah, many people, I'm sure, will be saying they find the Katrina Lakin phone links inspirational in themselves, really. And that's quite apart from when you're singing. Where are you next performing? How can people find out when they can actually see you and your fellow colleagues in singing action?
Well, I sing for a place called The Abbey Bells. So if you search for abbeybells.co.uk, mm-hmm. you'll be able to find us, and there's a list of our sing out dates. We think the next sing out we've got is at a wedding in a local church. For someone, and we're also busking at the food festival in Selby, which is after the York Maze event.
Is this where I actually see the Abbey Bells Bake Off in terms of that, or is that something completely different?
No, we did have a Bake Off last year, or was it the year before? We have had a Bake Off in the past, so that's us as well, yes.
Just to actually sort of acknowledge the Abbey Bells chorus from Selby, North Yorkshire, saying a cappella, that is unaccompanied music. And I see the translation in there, because people might say, a cappella, is that like, mozzarella or some kind of cheese? No, it's without music for that perspective. So,
if you look on the Labs website, there are choruses all over the country, though, for those that aren't close to Selby.
Well, as you know, Katrina, we've been very keen on getting some more jingles and ident sung for us at both Siren and Southside by the Abbey Bells chorus, because we like to feel that you are our adopted chorus in these kind of things, support the work through that. And I notice in terms of the repertoire, we've got Ain't Misbehaving, we've got I Got Rhythm, we've got Get Happy, we've got Lean On Me, all of which are great if we can just rework the lyrics slightly. So, you know, I think you need to...
I'm sure that can be arranged.
Think about that, and we'll definitely sort of process that side of things from then. So great stuff. A little tribute as well, because we've been sort of having one or two tributes, etc. I noticed that the founder of the Abbey Bells chorus, Alwyn Pooley, passed away in terms of recent sort of things, but never mind. So RIP, I'm sure she'll be singing in the Great Haven in the Sky.
Yes.
Well, life continues. That's the important thing. So what will you be doing today? Will you be singing out, or will it be a case of, no, I'm going to be psyching myself up to do something even more inspirational?
We're actually going to go to the Lake District for a long weekend today.
Right.
I've not been to the Lake District before. I hear it's beautiful, so I'm looking forward to it.
It will rain, Katrina, so take your wellies. I'm just sorry to say that.
We will.
I could say I've hoped it, but no, I've looked at the weather forecast, and it looks as though it's rain. Maybe not
Glastonbury.
Yeah, it's the Glastonbury weekend. What do you expect? And I know people say,
this is true.
Glastonbury's nowhere near the Lake District. Glastonbury's in Gloucestershire. You know, it's in that. The Lake District's further up the west coast. It makes no difference. It's still going to rain. There we are. But then again,
I'll still enjoy it.
You see, you can be singing in the rain.
And we probably will have a sing.
Exactly. Quite literally dance around the whole routine. Katrina, I think you know the last two questions, but we'll bowl them out to you in any case, because it is just the standard way we need to sort of just neatly tie this up before we go down to speak to Richard Fitzwilliams, who you may recall we once did a round London location report with. So Richard's very well, and he'll be sharing with us his thoughts on the recent birthday honours list. I noticed, Katrina, once again, they haven't actually made it Dame Katrina Lakin. I thought we might have actually sort of moved up that, or at least an OB or CB for yourself. Campaign will start. Yeah, absolutely. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
I have, thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Definitely, yes.
Yay!
From Airwolf, Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential and nursing care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough, providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential, nursing and dementia service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 22 33 34. That's 01642 22 33 34. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Absolutely. Southside Broadcasting, Channel 1 for Hospedia. And as mentioned, we are now delighted to be able to connect with that legend who, again, resonates when it comes to matters royal, or indeed filmic, etc. Of course, it's Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Well, delighted to be joining you on a Saturday.
Absolutely. And as I say, we may have to, because obviously it's Saturday, so I might have to sort of deal with any knockings on the door or various other things. We may be joined by Richard Pink, who will be talking to us about Gertrude Bell and how he's been producing a play which is now available online.
I can reveal, however, that this is your intention to bring in the fact that a new film is being made about Gertrude Bell, that it stars Nicole Kidman and Damian Lewis. And indeed, of course, this is, since it involves desert and expanses of scenery, this is your way of getting to Australia again, is it not?
Well, you see, Richard, we've come to know each other so well in these connective links that you can see the sort of mindset that's actually there. And I noticed Nicole Kidman didn't actually receive a CB or OB or anything in the Queen's Birthday Honours. Bit of a shock of that. But we haven't had a chance to speak about that, and I felt, well, we really should, you know, because...
No, we shouldn't, indeed. It's the honour system, it adapts. I mean, one of the essences, I think, of having such a system and having, well, the most complex that we have in the world, and also one with so many orders with different traditions. I mean, the reason I support this is because if you have grades, it encourages initiative and incentive, what you do to get your MB, then you can go to OB, CB, and DB, or KB, and so forth. There is within the system, which is unlike, say, the United States, but similar to that, the Legion of Honor in France, say. I mean, so many countries have different systems. That which encourages, and the main link now to an honor, is philanthropy, work you do for the community, that which you do to help others. So it's not just the day job. I mean, obviously, not all Nobel Prize winners or top actors have time for charitable work, but there's absolutely no doubt. 70% of the list this time, there were links with some form of work for the community and philanthropy, which I think is very, very good. The other thing to note is it's literally half of them were given to women. Now, that's a change.
Mm. Now, I feel it's only right that we provide a little bit of balance here. So from that wonderful organ of comment, shall we say, not quite a court jester, but organ of comment, Private Eye magazine, some surprising interesting lines were raised here, specifically the MBE for Curris Matthews for services to music. Extraordinary, according to Private Eye. Matthews began her career singing with Welsh group Catatonia, whose 1999 song Storm the Palace suggested invading Buckingham Palace, with the lyrics "Turn it into a bar, let them work in spa," before spitting out the line "You can stick your OBE in the post to me, or even just an MBE." Has that got lost in the editing suite somewhere, or is it just a case of, well, it was the last century when Curris did that?
It's the last century, but in actual fact, your cover quote of it brings back a very interesting incident in the honours system's history in 2003. Ben Zephaniah, in his 40s, a Rasta poet, was offered an OBE which he refused to accept and indeed attacked. This was some 3% tend annually to refuse honours, but to actually do so publicly was pretty well unknown. Michael Winner did it, but very, very few people do it. And one of the reasons for this was that he said he'd written a poem, Bought and Sold, where he'd attacked the system, and obviously they didn't know his work and were using him for purposes, he felt, of tokenism. He thought the system had, with its orders of the British Empire, had links to exploitation and colonialism, and he refused it. But obviously, Curris Matthews, I mean, it's 15 years ago, and I suspect also that even now you might find that a large number of those on the various committees, and we know who they are, we didn't until 2005, and the civil service stranglehold is broken, but I suspect they may be unfamiliar with that. It's perfectly
true. It's just, this is one of the reasons why sometimes it's worthwhile actually taking the Ian Hislop Private Eye-esque perspective on things, just to sort of work through this.
One thing Private Eye, and indeed others, might comment on, Daniel Day-Lewis for years. He's been on my list of, well, I mean, he hadn't been offered an honor at all, and I was amazed, because there is someone who has won not one, not two, but three Best Actor Oscars. Nicholson won two and then won for Best Supporting Actor, so Day-Lewis leads the field. It does show that some of the decisions are made after a very, very long time.
Well, that's part and parcel of the whole thing. Again, I'll just cite this one again from Private Eye, Dave's Mates, and I think we know where we're going with this one, Richard. The Prime Minister's Foreign Affairs Advisor, John Casson, was awarded and rewarded with an aspect of holding David Cameron's hand at international summits, obviously in a metaphysical sense. The Companion of the Order of St. George, she becomes a CMG. Mr. Cameron's Principal Private Secretary, Chris Martin, has also got a CB, and Helen Stevenson, a CB. Helen Stevens, of course, is Director of the Office of Civil Society in the Cabinet Office.
I didn't know, I have to say, and most people won't be familiar with the names, but of course, the Private Eye is trying to imply that they're handing out gold to those who have contacts with the great and the powerful. Well, I mean, always the system should reward those who do have some form of links with those who are in power if they do their job. Well, I would not object to. The problem with the system has been, not so much now, but certainly in past years, is that there was far too much automaticity. You got a job, and then automatically you got a gong. And equally, regarding links to those in power and so forth, I mean, there'll always be a certain amount of that, but almost all the list got gongs for doing something for charity as well. And that, if that is all the Private Eye can dig out of a list that includes Hilary Mantel. I'm an admirer of her novels, but not...
Yes, but not of her views with respect to... Exactly.
I would point out, however, that essay that she wrote... Now, it was a fascinating essay. I've read it several times, but the views in the essay, as expressed about Kate being a peg to hang clothes on, all the rest of it, a whole series of personal comments, as you read the essay, they appeared, as, dare I say it, it was pointed out by the tabloids, to be her views, and the fact that the subject of the essay was the way that people perceive royals isn't the point. The way she wrote it was... It appeared that was what she thought. Anyway, she's a dame, good heavens. I mean, her books are being adapted into plays, and what will follow, I should think, films. Also, I mean, we must pay tribute to the courageous Stephen Sutton. His fight against cancer, his posthumous honour, I mean, that is very central, I think, to the... at the heart of this list.
Absolutely.
The sort of person that they are trying to honour, someone who shows tremendous courage, but also someone who does a great deal for others, raising funds.
Richard, this is one of the reasons why you're such a wonderful editor of International Who's Who a few
but
years ago.
But I must mention Angelina Jolie, because we have her as a campaigner, and as you know, with William Hague recently, and I mean several other representatives of countries who really do carry clout. It's not just that she's been to so many areas which have been so troubled throughout the world, but also that her campaign against violence to women in war zones, the fact that the perpetrators could be brought to justice, I mean, is remarkable. And the fact that we can give honorary honors to those who are friends of Britain, I think that's one of the strengths of the system. I mentioned, too, for Dame Maggie Smith, the prime of Miss Jean Brodie, the memories that brings back a companion.
It's the creme de la creme, Richard. Let's hold it there momentarily, because we're talking again about honors, and we'll resume to where we introduced you, obviously, with referring to Gertrude Bell CBE, of course, because the two gentlemen who are singularly responsible for bringing a magical play, or an audio play, which we're going to actually be featuring on Southside, later on today, are in the studio. We have Richard Pink.
Hello, morning,
Richard.
Hello.
And, of course, Richard, would you like to introduce your colleague?
This is Pete Thomas, who wrote the play.
Here we are. Pete Thomas, the writer of the play. So there we move the microphone slightly more towards yourself, so you'll be sort of that from there, Pete, and then that's okay. Just move it along. It's all right. You can physically move it. I'll tell you what, I shall lean across the sort of piece, and there we are. It's actually taking it down on that side of thing. Pete, if we can come to you first, and I'll introduce you both, actually, Peter and Richard, to... Well, actually, two Richards here. In fact, we have Richard Pink and Richard Fitzwilliams, who's online, so this is going to be quite nice. Good. We can have Richard 1 and Richard 2 here, which is so. I'll go to the first and the second. Let's come to you first, Peter, if that's okay. What inspired you about Gertrude Bowen? Because she's a local, born in Washington originally, but, you know, but right. Talk to us about how you got involved with the story.
I think it was just many years ago I came across some references about her, with her being a local person, everything, and started to follow that up and researched it, looked at some biographies, and just became interested in her.
Okay.
And then that turned into a piece of fiction in a way, yeah.
Now, the YouTube site is wonderfully illustrated with a whole range of photographs and images of, obviously, Iraq at the time and a range of other factors from that. Was that in your mind when you were putting that together, or was that your dealings, Richard Pink?
Yeah, I put that together to go with the, you know, because we did it as an audio player, if you like, and to put it on YouTube, I thought it needed some illustrations. So Peter had already researched a lot of photographs and had a DVD sort of presentation, so I used some of those and some others that I researched and some photographs that I took myself at East Roundton of the churchyard and inside.
I use the term Gertrude of Arabia. Is that a fair sort of point, Peter, would you say, in terms of what she was... Can I just share with the listener what sort of life she actually had and what inspired you about Gertrude Bell?
I think that the press, the popular press at the time, described her as the uncrowned queen of Arabia.
The
uncrowned queen of Mesopotamia and things like that. And she was very, very popular in that sense and was moved aside slightly when Lawrence of Arabia was popularised by the American journalist who took him on.
Exactly the point I want to bring in Richard Fitzwilliams, because...
Yes, Thomas made Lawrence of Arabia an international figure, and I mean, there's no doubt that the promotional aspect of it was absolutely extraordinary, Lawrence, especially as he was the subject of a play, Ross, by Terence Rattigan, I mean, a legend, whereas Gertrude Bell, an absolutely fascinating life, yet I suspect if you were to mention the name in circles that weren't familiar with the history of the Middle East, not that number of people would have heard of her.
But is that going to change with Nicole Kidman, Richard?
Well, of course it is likely to, and the cynics have said that the reason that there wasn't a film about her was that there was no romance in her life, which of course was untrue. And she had, it seems, a passionate affair with Major Charles Doughty Wiley. And both of them died in rather unusual circumstances. I wouldn't wish to give listeners any spoilers, but there's no question that there are elements in her life also linked, of course, to Iraq today, so it's highly relevant, and the fact that she's a figure from the colonial period, but nonetheless someone just like Lawrence, who, or very similar to Lawrence, both of them were attended Oxford, and both of them apparently, I see, were 5'5". No question that there are so many ingredients in the story that's so extraordinary, because she was able to immerse herself so in tribal life as Lawrence was, and also they fought. But she, of course, had a great deal of influence, and of course there are various controversial aspects of what she did today and her judgment and what constitutes Iraq and so on. But no question that it's very much a film of our time, indeed very uncomfortably of the moment, I would say.
From the inspirational perspective, I can see this is a story that needed to be told. Do you think Nicole Kidman's the right person for the role of Sir Peter?
I'm sure. I'm sure she is.
Richard, your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm not so sure. I say that because I've just seen her in Grace of Monaco, where, quite honestly...
Disaster. Complete disaster.
It was a disaster, and she was a disaster in it. But I don't think that will harm the fact that if you look at The Hours, if you look at The Others, if you look at Rabbit Hole, they're three superb films with excellent performances. We'll forget a certain one set in the Antipodes for the sake of argument, and also Cold Mountain, which I thought was a catastrophe. And consider the fact that if she immerses herself in this role, if it's well-directed, if it's Bubble got a good script, Damien Lewis is an excellent actor. He, incidentally, was honoured with an OBE in the last honours list, I'm glad to see. So interesting to see what they produce, but the direction, the script, I mean, that's what absolutely killed Grace of Monaco. I mean,
personally,
disastrous turkey. I think the important thing, I think, of having Kidman in this role, you've got a top star, and that will make the name Gertrude Bell go worldwide, and people will start being interested, and they will start researching about her, and there will be interest. If the film is publicized properly, and believe me, it will be, because it will be a large-scale epic, almost certainly, then I think this is probably a very good choice.
So let's just hold it there, because that's quite interesting, bringing Richard Pink on this side of things. I mean, obviously we're looking at Gertrude Bell, a cartoon riding by, and a cartoon, of course, translates as a queen in many ways, so it's a queen riding by, which is why the title is there. Have you been contacted by the film studio? Because, I mean, I think that hour, which we're going to hear, obviously, later on today, and we're a little exclusive, say, for Southside listeners, and indeed it'll be released as a podcast as well, I thought it was outstanding. And indeed, from your own perspective, was that a case of just, again, one of those things of it's synchronicity? We've just had this idea at the same time as the movie's come through.
I think you have to understand that Pete's actually been researching Gertrude Bell for about 30 years or so, and has written about her for a long time. And it was really just tapping into all the work that Pete had done, and getting a focused sort of play about it. And obviously we restricted by budget and what have you. So we had to have, you know, we've only got four actors.
I think Dawn Iverson is a wonderful character. In fact, just talk us through the cast who you've actually got in there.
Dawn Iverson plays Gertrude Bell, a local actress, and it's her husband, Rob Kilvard, who plays two parts, who plays Doughty Wiley and plays Frank Lascelles. And then we've got Jack McBride, who plays Frank Stafford, who's the reporter who, in effect, sort of tells the story. It's his story of his research into her life. And then Hugh Bell is played by Ray Burton, who plays her father, who's asked Frank Stafford to do this research into how she's died.
I'm just raising this so that Richard Fitzwilliams will acknowledge when he comes to critique the film, remember who pioneered this in terms of audio plays first, Richard. You know,
I note the point, well made, well taken.
And Pete, have you been contacted by any of the movie makers, or have they sort of been...
No. When I first started researching Gertrude, and one of the places I went to, obviously, was Newcastle University, where they've got the Bell collection.
Yeah.
And I discovered there was like a cottage industry in the northeast of people looking at Gertrude Bell and all that.
I mean, I appreciate it, and obviously it's a bit like in the world of academia. You could say, Hugh Swines, I've been researching that for five decades of my life, and now you've taken all those. But I think it's worthwhile noting that obviously the excellent, and I do say, and we'll hear how good it is in a few moments, it is excellent. I know even Richard Fitzwilliams will probably download. He can't stay with us for the whole sort of hour slot that we're going to run, but as it works today, I'm sure, Richard, you'll take time out to have a listen to the play and peruse all that, won't you, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I most certainly will.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to take a mini break now. We've got two final questions for you, good self, Richard, as we've sort of covered the Queen's Birthday Honours List, both good and more challenging in terms of offerings of that. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I've enjoyed it enormously.
So can we connect with you again in the very near future for your usual probably 8:30 Thursday morning time slot thing, or thereabouts, or 8:20?
Yes, indeed, and of course we'll be discussing The Fault in Our Stars, number one at the US box office, and we'll find out why.